And then you've got Zelensky trying to blow up Russia. And I read Ukraine and Russia are meeting in Turkey today to talk about peace, which one? And the demands for Ukraine are the same demands that you would make if you had won the war. And it's not going to happen. Okay. They've been losing the war since February of 2022. And Zelensky is like Macron and Merz. He's so coked up, he can't figure it out. So we're in a very dangerous period of time.
Bob Moriarty, good afternoon and good morning to me. Good afternoon to you. How are you, my friend?
It's been so long since we've talked.
Yeah, it's been a week.
We exactly.
So things have obviously escalated significantly with specifically, well, everywhere, but specifically with the war, the Russia-Ukraine war. And then you also have this financial setup right now in the bond market where it's really catastrophic. Let's talk about all of that and let's tie it all together. But let's start with Russia and Ukraine. Where are we at with this? And how is this also? Let's just start with that.
Okay, Zelensky has sent a very clear and convincing message to the Russians. We're going to keep screwing to you until you respond. And the most significant part of the attack over the weekend is not actually the attack on the aircraft, it's the attack on the trains. Okay, did you realize exactly what happened there?
No, explain it to me. Explain it to
Okay,
us.
they've got trains running all over Russia, and somebody came in and set explosives up, and when a train came through, they blew up the bridge. The bridge hit the train. In one incident, killed seven people. In the other incident, it injured the guy that was driving the train and the crew of the train. But that is absolutely an act of terrorism. That it's an attack against a civilian target, not a military target. And Trump was screaming last week about how horrible it was that the Russians had sent drones into Ukraine, because half a dozen people had been killed. Well, actually, for as many drones as Russia sent in, that was a very mild attack. But it's Ukraine that is attacking civilian targets, not Russia. And they did attack the airfields, but it's one of those CIA bullshit attacks. It's tactical in nature, but it's not strategic. It's a way to piss off the enemy. However, you don't win a war by pissing the enemy off. And in fact, in most cases, it actually extends the war. They did a big survey after World War II. The British did the survey, and they wanted to measure how effective the bombing of Germany was, which was the biggest bombing in the world to date. And the conclusion was the bombing actually made the war last longer and resulted in more casualties on the Allied sides. So a lot of times when you do something like this attack on those aircraft, it's meaningless from a military point of view, but it could be a pyrrhic victory in which you piss the Russians off so much they're going to do something. The Russians would be justified, according to their nuclear doctrine, to use nuclear weapons in Ukraine in response. Now, I'm not suggesting they're going to do that. However, it is in writing that that's one of the things they could do. And I would hate to see that. I mean, we've talked about this for weeks. But we're closer to a nuclear war than we have ever been. And literally the next day or two, could be critical. Now, I started talking about Israel. Israel has threatened to attack Iran in the three-day period that started Sunday. And the problem with the Israel is they lie about so much that it's really hard to figure out when they're telling the truth. But every once in a while, just to confuse people, they do tell the truth. And I'm convinced they want to attack Iran, and I sincerely believe they will attack Iran. It will be catastrophic for Israel, and obviously it could be catastrophic for the world. But before you started recording, we had carried forward into talking about the bond market. And the bond market in the United States is collapsing, but it's not actually the U.S. bond market that is such a disaster. It's the Japanese bond market, and it is beyond catastrophic. And the U.S. bond market is reacting to the Japanese bond market. And the Japanese bond market is going to put a lot of banks and a lot of insurance companies out of business in Japan. But the real danger is in the carry trade, where there are literally trillions of dollars at risk, and large institutions are going to be forced to dump investments that they've held for years because I'm trying to think of a good way of putting this. The danger in the carry trade is once you go past a reasonable point, instead of it being a guaranteed profit, it becomes a guaranteed loss. And that's exactly where we are. And to the extent, I can't tell you whether the geopolitical things that are going on is because of the market or whether the market is because of the geopolitical events. But there are bad things happening. There are things that we've been talking about for months, and they are catastrophic.
Yeah, so I want to, let's go into the carry trade. And for all of our listeners and viewers that don't know the carry trade, I'll give you a 30,000-foot view. Basically, what that is institutions, investors, whatever, what they'll do is they borrow yen or sell the yen, if you would, or sell the bond market there just because of, or borrow really zero interest rates, and they put their money specifically in the U.S., specifically in the U.S. bond market. And it was easy money as long as the yen was suppressed, as long as the yields on the Japanese bond market were neutral or negative, as they were, or flat. And the U.S. bond market had a higher return. Correct me if I'm wrong, Bob. That's all messed up now.
Because here's the deal. You're a little bit correct and a little bit incorrect. They would trade something like selling a 10-year note and buying a 30-year note to collect 0.25% interest over a five-year period. The key is they were borrowing money cheap. They were investing literally trillions of dollars on low risk, low gain investments. And that's a good deal until interest rates change rapidly. Now, 2 years ago, the highest rated bonds in the UK dropped by 53% in 1 year, and it damn near put Britain out of business financially. It was catastrophic. And a lot of people are still carrying those losses on their books. So the Japanese institutions that were holding government bonds are getting wiped out. Okay. Their losses are literally in trillions of dollars. However, it's rotating over into the carry trade, again, where there's trillions of dollars and nobody even knows how much the total amount is. If you go to the Bank for International Settlements and you look up derivatives, the over-the-counter derivatives are about $800 billion, which frankly isn't a lot of money. So you've got over-the-counter derivatives, and then you've got off-the-books derivatives that we don't know how large they are, but obviously they're a lot bigger. But the key is, in the over-the-counter derivatives, 80% of the derivatives are not gold, not silver, not the pound, not the euro, not the dollar. It's interest rates. And the speed of change of the Japanese interest rates is catastrophic. It's literally universe class dangerous. And it's spilling over into everything else. And we've got something that's going to be very similar to long-term capital management back in 1998, where Thailand and Korea blew up, and then 6 months later, the rest of the world blew up. This is not under control. It is spinning dangerously out of control. The Trump temper tantrum tariffs are making the situation worse. The uncertainty in the world is making the situation worse. The drop in the value of the dollar is making the situation worse. And then you got Zelensky trying to blow up Russia. And I read Ukraine and Russia are meeting in Turkey today to talk about peace, which one. And the demands for Ukraine are the same demands that you would make if you had won the war. And it's not going to happen. Okay. They've been losing the war since February of 2022. And Zelensky is like Macron and Merz. He's so coked up, he can't figure it out. So we're in a very dangerous period of time.
Yeah, no, we really are. And I want to push on that. The bond market and the meaning of this, and it's almost, it's too big to really to figure it out. And we're not going to figure it all out in this discussion either. But all I know is the bond that is bringing money back to Japan, which is taking money out of the U.S., correct me if I'm wrong, which is catastrophic for the U.S. bond market.
Well, it's catastrophic for the whole world.
The whole world, yeah.
Because, I mean, it wasn't just the U.S. that was involved in the carry trade. It was every financial institution in the world. And the reason the money is going back is not to invest in Japan.
Right.
Because they have lost trillions of dollars. Okay.
It's to cover losses.
And I say things that nobody else has got the guts to say. The United States is functionally bankrupt, period. End of story. They are bankrupt, and we know how that movie ends. But Japan's in worse shape than the United States is. And every institution, financial institution in Japan right now is functionally bankrupt, and a lot of them are going to have to say, okay, we quit, okay? I believe this is the financial catastrophe that I saw coming in August of 1971. It's all related to getting away from gold.
Yeah. And on the note, gold is screaming and has been screaming really. Well, it's been screaming for the last 25 years. If you look at just a regular price chart and just at this dropping, gold's up, you know, another 70 bucks just today, just this morning, which it's 9:22 a.m. June the 2nd, just today. Let's talk a little bit about gold then, and then we'll go into Russia and Ukraine and dig that out a little bit more. So the really, I've been waiting and actually expecting just a correction in gold, and it just doesn't correct. And I'm assuming that is because of the huge big players are now fleeing to gold as opposed to paper. When I say paper, I mean the bond market. I mean futures contracts and even stocks.
Well, if you go back 50 years, every time there was a financial catastrophe, there was a rush into treasuries. And if anything, today, there is a rush out of treasuries. And I'm going to say something. It'll probably get me lynched by all the gold books. $3,500 gold is absurd. Okay. Now, that doesn't mean it's not going to go higher. But I look at $3,500 gold. I was buying gold, $20 gold pieces in 1968 and 1969 for $35 a piece. And there's 0.98 of an ounce in a $20 gold piece. And, you know, you were buying it literally for pennies. And that same thing today would cost 100 times that much. Now, I just intuitively feel that that's too high a price. And I've said for the last 2 months, I thought we would see a correction. And we had kind of a sideways correction. But there are times that geopolitical events override financial good sense. And what's going on in Israel and what's going on in Ukraine is making everybody to rush to safety. So it's going to hurt treasuries. The Japanese might as well close the door, okay? But everybody's going to rush into gold. And frankly, yeah, I saw this coming 20 years ago, and all the golds I bought, I guess my average price is maybe $600 or $700. And my average price for silver is under $5 an ounce. And I never bought it with the intention of making money. I bought it with the intention of that it's my financial reserve. And banks need financial reserve. Corporations need financial reserves. And individuals need financial reserve. And that's my financial reserve.
Yeah, no, that's exactly the way you should look at physical gold. Everybody should look at physical gold is to have a significant stash as a financial reserve. Absolutely. Let's talk about, let's go back to Russia and Ukraine. I'm looking at this and not only over the weekend, but also, which was significant, Zelensky was saying, hey, we just brought Russia's Pearl Harbor. And it makes me think, what are you thinking? Number one, and then it pushes on like this whole theory, and I think it's a very good theory, is that they want a war over there that's going to involve pretty much all of Europe. Well, tell me.
It's going to involve the whole world.
The whole world, yeah.
Okay. This literally will be a world war. Zelensky, unfortunately, was reading the book upside down. Yamamoto, okay, said it would be a mistake to attack the Americans at Pearl Harbor because if you didn't defeat them right there, it would destroy Japan. And Yamamoto actually got it. And from the point of view of Ukraine, yes, it was a Pearl Harbor, but they're the Japanese. And from a tactical point of view, and I was in combat 20 months, from a tactical point of view, it was an extremely effective attack. However, from a strategic point of view, it was absolutely meaningless. There are some other things going on this weekend, and I had talked to you about the train. There were two attacks on Russian trains in Russia where somebody put explosives on bridges. When the train passed underneath the bridge, they blew the bridge, and the bridge fell on the train. Now, that is an absolute attack of terrorism. And it's a good way to piss off the enemy. And frankly, I am shocked at how Putin has, and Lavrov have managed to maintain their composure when they're dealing with brain-dead idiots. Now, there was something very subtle. I was an intelligence officer and I have a condition that I'm very sensitive to numbers. Do you remember Trump talking about 67 million Russians dying in World War II?
Vaguely.
Okay. One of his guys, he made a speech somewhere, and he was saying, yeah, the Russians participated in World War II. We were really the ones who won it, but they lost 67 million people. Well, I am a number freak, and the actual number is somewhere between 20 and 27 million, including Putin's oldest brother. World War II was a disaster for the Russians, and they remember it to the day, and it was an existential event, and they are not going to allow it to happen again. So the one thing that I can guarantee is they may not win, but they are going to not lose, and the rest of the world needs to pay attention to it. And Trump's advisors are so ignorant of history, they're feeding him numbers that simply don't make any sense. Now, we just had the 80th anniversary of the end of World War II in Europe, and the really strange thing is the Russians weren't invited. The Russians won World War II. The Russians killed 80% of the Germans who died, and it was far more important a war to the Russians. Now, to compare the 20 million to 27 million dead Russians, there were 425,000 dead Americans, okay? It was an almost meaningless war for the United States, but it was an enormous war for Russia. So Russia takes war seriously, and the United States doesn't. Russia fights wars to win peace, and Americans fight wars to win contracts for the military-industrial complex. And the quality of the Russian weapons is so much better than the American weapons that going into combat with Russians is like carrying a knife to a gunfight.
So back to then, they're meeting today in Turkey to discuss peace. I don't see how Zelensky's going to, he's not going to dictate terms. And to be candid, this is speculation. I don't see how, unless he's a complete madman, which he is, how he would do this alone.
Oh, he's not doing it alone.
Yeah. I mean, work that out for me. I mean, because he'd have to do it with the backing of the U.S. or a bunch of neocons that, again, want to support the industrial military complex to make money. So work that out for me.
According to Trump, he wants peace. But when Trump went to the Middle East, it's obvious that the entire purpose was to make sales for the military-industrial complex. Some things that he does are so bizarre that I can't see why other people don't get it immediately. What has happened in the last year to increase the defense budget by 13%. What event is so important that we needed to increase the defense budget by 13% and take it over $1 trillion? Nothing.
Nothing.
Yeah. You know, we're pouring money into Ukraine, but it's chump change based on the American defense budget. We're pouring money into Israel, but again, it's chump change compared to a $1 trillion budget. But a guy wants to run for president on the basis of securing peace, but increases the defense budget by 13%. Now, were you aware when Zelensky ran for president in 2019, do you know what his platform was all about?
I don't, but I'm going to take a guess. It's peace.
Peace with Donbass.
Yeah.
Okay. He was selected to secure peace, and he turned around, of course, and done exactly the same thing. And I'll be I'll be frank, and nobody's going to have the balls to say this except me. I believe Israel is on the doorstep of attacking Iran. I believe that it would be catastrophic for Israel. The attack on Russia was fairly meaningless, but it was an attack that will really piss off the Russian generals, period, and the Russian people. And for them both to occur at exactly the same time, the chances of the United States not being involved are zero.
Yeah. So when you say who's involved, we're talking about the CIA?
Of course.
Yeah.
I worked with CIA, okay? I wasn't CIA, but when I was in Vietnam, I was an F-4 pilot from July until November of 68, and then I was a bird dog pilot from November of 68 till July of 69. And we used to support insertions into Laos by CIA personnel. I know how the CIA works, and they're really big on chicken shit little attacks that don't accomplish anything. The whole Bay of Pigs thing, not the Bay of Pigs, the Gulf of Tonkin incident was about the CIA sponsoring South Vietnamese PT boats to attack a North Vietnamese naval station. And again, it's one of those chicken shit little attacks that pisses everybody off, but it doesn't change the end of the war. The CIA is all about creating problems, okay, because that's how they get paid. Now, that's bullshit. If you get into a war, the only legitimate reason for war is to accomplish peace. And nobody ever talks about peace in the United States because they don't want it.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. I couldn't agree more with you. This is spilling over. Then you got to come everywhere. It's spilling over everywhere. But then you have, as you mentioned, Israel want to be an aggressor to Iran. And that's obviously with the U.S. backing here. You mentioned off camera something that we have a 72-hour window here. That started, I want to say, you mentioned on Sunday. Work that out for me a little bit more about, is Israel going in? Is that what you think? Are we going to start?
I read an intelligence report that said Israel intends to attack Iran, and there's a 72-hour period. There is a Jewish religious festival, I don't even know what you call it, something occurring that started on Sunday, and in a 72-hour period from Sunday, they will attack Iran. Now, because they lie so consistently, you can't believe everything they say. However, once in a while, by accident, they actually tell the truth. Israel intends to attack Iran. They've made it crystal clear. They're doing it under the belief that we're the chosen people, and because we're the chosen people, God loves us and hates you, and we're going to win. We don't have to obey international law. We don't have to obey treaties. We don't give a shit about borders. Genocide, it's perfectly okay. Shooting children is just good, clean sport. Starving a million people to death, good, clean fun. And we'll turn it into a Trump resort at the end of the day. Now, frankly, that's sick, okay? And nobody's got the guts to say that, because if you say that, you're an anti-Semite. When I came back from Vietnam, I had 54 awards, okay? The most significant award that I've ever had since then was to be called an anti-Semite. That has become an award just short of the Medal of Honor.
Because you're calling it like you see it.
No, I'm calling it like it is. Anybody that talks about Israel and doesn't use the word genocide is not talking about Israel.
So how does the rest of the Middle East respond to this? Again, because I know Trump, we know Trump was over there, what, a week, 2 weeks ago. It seems to me like an attack on Iran would spur trouble with Saudi, et cetera, unless they want it as well.
It's really hard to tell. I have said, and I maintain this true, and I've said it for years, 100% of what you hear from the mainstream media is a lie. It was true about 9/11. It was true about the GFC. It was true about COVID. It's true about Ukraine. It's true about Gaza. It's all bullshit. They lie about everything. And I did see something today saying Saudi Arabia is insisting that Iran agree to the proposal by the United States to eliminate their nuclear program. Now, their nuclear program is for peaceful purposes. It's perfectly legal. It is absolutely in accordance with international law and the IAEA, and it's legitimate. Israel wants to attack Iran not because of some fiction of a nuclear weapons program. Israel attacks everybody. Israel attacked Gaza. Israel attacked the West Bank. Israel attacked Libya. Israel attacked Syria. Israel attacked Lebanon. Israel has attacked Iraq. Wait a minute. The only thing common in all those attacks is Israel. Israel can't get along with their neighbors. But what everybody is forgetting, the weapons that Iran possesses and has used are so much more effective than the U.S. weapons. The damn Houthis, okay, who are walking around in sandals with turbans on, are firing ballistic missiles, hitting the biggest air, not airbase, the biggest civilian airport in Israel, and none of the defenses could stop the missile. Okay, do not ever go into a gunfight carrying a knife. And that's exactly what Israel is doing. I believe there's an excellent chance it will go nuclear. When Israel attacked Syria in December, there was an ammunition depot that was blown up. And if you look at the results of the explosion in terms of G-forces, it was identical to that of a nuclear weapon. I believe Israel actually used a nuclear weapon in combat in December of last year. And we know Israel used a nuclear weapon to demonstrate in South Africa 40 years ago. So Israel pretends it doesn't have nuclear weapons, but it not only has them, it's begging to use them. I'm going to ask you a trick question that everybody hates. How does a nation of 9 million people defeat a nation of 90 million people?
With the backing of the U.S.
That. The U.S. couldn't even blow up the Nord Stream. Give me a fucking break.
Tell me.
Yeah, I mean, there were 4 pipelines. Okay. Mm-hmm. The U.S. blew up 3 of them. You have confidence the United States is. I was in Vietnam. Do you know how many victory parades we had after Vietnam?
No.
Because we didn't win. We lost. We lost every war that we fought since World War II. And nobody's saying, you know, gee, The only thing in common in all these wars is we spend all this money, we accomplish nothing, and we lose. Why do we keep doing that? Well, it's good for the military-industrial complex. Okay, great idea.
So, really, this story is going to play out over the next several hours, meaning the next 24 to 48 hours, more than likely.
Let me put it this way. And I was an intelligence officer, and I went through intelligence school. Nothing is 100%. I believe there's a 70% chance of it happening, but there's a 30% chance of it not happening. I believe my source is good, and there's lots of evidence to support it on the web. And for Ukraine to attack Russia at exactly the same time could not possibly be a coincidence. Now, I'm going to point something out. If you look at what Zelensky is demanding of Russia, and if you look at what Israel / the United States is demanding of Iran, neither is even remotely possible. There is no way in hell that Russia is going to turn around, walk back to Russia, and allow Zelensky to keep attacking Donbass. It ain't going to happen. And likewise, Iran is not going to give up their ability to defend themselves. So Trump is demanding things or suggesting things that his people should understand don't have a chance in hell of succeeding. And frankly, I think it's just a game. I think there's been a giant setup, and you've got this guy pretending to be the peace president. Who do you think paid for all those bombs to bomb Gaza? Who do you think's paying for all the money to attack the West Bank and Syria and Lebanon, the United States?
Yeah. Wow. So I really don't know where to go with all of this, other than it could be very interesting. Again, several hours, 24 to 48 hours. And again, my thoughts was on this very surface level, I was just shocked that Zelensky did what he did. But when you dig a little deeper, it somewhat makes sense because he's been off the backing from the U.S. And it's just really disheartening and sad just because so much is at stake.
Nope. It's dangerous.
Yeah. It's not only dangerous to be catastrophic.
Absolutely be in their legal rights to attack Brussels, to attack Germany, to attack the UK, and to attack the United States. I mean, that attack on those airfields took place with help from the United States.
They have to.
At the instigation of the United States. And you know, when a bully comes up to a kid in a schoolyard and keeps pushing the kid again and again and again and again, eventually the kid wakes up and says, you know, I need to pop this guy in the nuts, okay? If I don't do that, he's going to kick my ass. Putin has been remarkably sane, but he's dealing with insane people. Netanyahu is insane. The entire leadership of Israel today. It has nothing to do with religion. The entire leadership of Israel are insane people. They go into their Congress and they debate whether it's okay to kill babies. Okay, now when a guy comes up to you and he wants to debate whether it's okay to kill babies, you're dealing with a sick individual. You're dealing with somebody who's not dealing with full deck. And he's insane, and he's going to do insane things. Trump now owns Gaza. It's his war. Trump now owns Zelensky. It's his war. The United States started it. It started back in 1945. In 1990, the United States agreed in writing not to move NATO an inch to the east. And nobody talks about that anymore. Well, there were 15 people in NATO then, and there's 30 people in NATO now. So they moved hell of a lot more than one inch, okay? But it's now Trump's fault, okay? It's going to go down on his tombstone Gaza, Trump's war, Zelensky, Trump's war, and could it go nuclear? Yeah.
Yeah. So with all of this going on, let me throw you a little bit of a curveball. And this is something I've been a little bit confused on. I'm not confused on why gold is going up so much, but you and I both own a lot of gold stocks. And gold stocks are catching a bid, finally. What's your position on gold stocks then? Because if it all goes down, wouldn't the gold stocks, especially the sandbox that you invest in and play in, what's their exposure to all of this?
We've got thunder outside and my guard dog. I thought I was buying dog. My guard dog is not a guard dog. He's a pussy.
It's okay. I don't hear him.
Okay. Ask me the question again.
Yeah. So you and I both invest in a lot of gold stocks, specifically junior mining stocks. They're finally catching a bid. It seems like money is finally flowing into them. What's the effect on all of this, what we just talked about, on gold stocks? Because it seems like if the stock market goes down, these would go down significantly as well. What would be your thoughts on that?
Okay, pick one. Either pick the 70% or pick the 30%.
I'm picking 30%.
Okay, if there is some sanity in the world, and that's a big stretch. There's only a 30% chance of that. If there is some sanity in the world, we do not start World War III in the next day or two. From a financial point of view, the junior resource stocks have been beaten so bad, the only way they can go from here is up. Now, while there will be giant declines in a lot of commodities, okay, it'll be temporary. When the Japanese carry trade gets unwound, and it's getting unwound right now, it's going to have big impacts on a lot of different areas. But I think we have the greatest opportunity for profit in junior resource stocks I've ever seen or ever heard of. I'm buying stocks for pennies, like 2 cents, and the company's got a market cap of $2 million. Well, here's the deal. If you go to Vancouver and you start a mining company and you sign a deal with somebody and you got a pretty secretary out front and you got a two-line telephone, you should be worth at least $5 million.
Yeah. All right. You know, I've used this analogy. It reminds me very similar of the fall of the Soviet Union and all of those people that had got the assets one way or the other, the natural resource stock or the natural resources in Russia. They made billions, not overnight, but over almost overnight, but in really over the course of decades or several years, they just made so much money because the assets were so cheap. I see this almost very similarly. These assets right now are so cheap.
There's something else you need to consider.
What is
the total value of Bitcoin?
The total value? Like all of the Bitcoins out in circulation right now? I don't know. Tell me.
It's over $2 trillion.
That's crazy to me.
Well, here's the deal. When you can hold a Bitcoin in your hand, you will know what its true value is. Until then, you won't know. It's a bunch of digits and letters. Again, and it pisses everybody off, there are 15,000 variations of cryptocurrencies. We've even got the President of the United States who is now accepting bribes in cryptocurrencies, which I find absolutely amazing. And, you know, which would you rather have, a handful of Bitcoin or a handful of gold? And I think the answer is pretty self-evident. But how can you have 15,000 variations of Beanie Babies and any of them have any value? And the answer is you can't. However, $2 trillion, a lot of money, $2 trillion comes into gold or silver or platinum. They're going to go up a lot. People don't even understand how small the gold market is and how small the junior resource market is.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. On that note, I met with a company here in my home city, Atlanta, Georgia. This was, I don't know, 3 months ago. They had a market cap of $7 million. They had $7 million in the bank. In the bank. And it is basically, I don't know exactly what the price of the stock was, but it was under 10 cents. And I'm like thinking, you're getting, if you were to buy this company, you're getting the asset for free because they have $7 million in the bank.
That same situation existed in 2000. And there were companies that I was following that the share price was 66 cents and the cash on hand was 75 cents. And they were producing gold, and they were making a profit on the gold. But it's a measure of how stupid people are. And people take offense to what I say, but people are dumber than bricks, okay? So when you invest, you don't need to worry about the interest rates. You don't need to worry about the Russians or the Jews or the Iranian Zelensky. You just look at what people are doing and realize these people are so stupid that if I do the opposite, I'll make a lot of money. And if you do that, you'll make a lot of money.
Yeah. Interesting. Well, Bob, you're a busy guy, so I'll let you go, but we'll end on that. But thank you. I'd love to have you on again shortly. I hope not to have you on again shortly, because that means something really the fan. But
well, actually, if you don't have me on shortly, it's over.
That's what I'm saying. Hope not to have you on. But that being said, I say that in jest. I really enjoy our time together and talking. Yeah, we'll have you on again soon, regardless of the circumstances. Thank you so much for your thoughts.
We can always hope.